And now, reading and writing and radio.
Every night at 12 o'clock, a horse, black as night, with the ever-increasing speed of light, comes to me. I call him Midnight, and no one knows but me. Not one soul knows he's there, no one but me. I go for rides upon his back, but no one knows but me. I never told a single soul about my rides o'er the road, and no one knows but me. No one knows where he's from, no one but me. And when he gallops out of sight, not to be seen again till night, no one knows but me.
The author of that poem was Joanne, a student at Parkway School. But it could be you. WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University presents Reading and Writing and Radio, a program about creative writing. Your host is Jacqueline Jackson, children's author and professor of literature at Sangamon State University.
The author of the Oz books, L. Frank Baum, has written many more than The Wizard of Oz, and they are all rich with invention. He is very good at thinking up odd tribes that live in the Oz country and have special traits and features. And one that impressed me when I was reading the Oz books avidly as a child was a tribe that had no speech, but their thoughts flashed on their foreheads like a TV screen, so that everyone knew what everyone else was thinking, and the communication was through checking with what was playing on the person's forehead. Now, this was long before the time of TV, around 1910 or so, I suppose, that this book was written. And Dorothy, or whoever it was that was visiting this tribe, found it very difficult to live with them because she was wanting to get away and she had negative thoughts and so forth. And yet, as her thoughts were flashed onto her forehead in the style of the tribe, it would say all these things. The thoughts would be given. I suppose all of us have thought what it would be like if we could read each other's thoughts, or if other people could read our thoughts, so that there wouldn't be any "no one knows but me." Everybody would know. I recall having a discussion on this topic once, and the conclusions that came out of it were that, first of all, everybody would probably fly apart like a smashed snowball. You would discover that your best and most trusted friend had certain thoughts about you that you didn't like. As Harriet the Spy, when her friends found her notebook, you see, which in a way was her thoughts written down instead of flashed on her forehead, you would discover that your own thoughts would cause negative response in other people. But then as we got talking about it, we realized that everybody would be in the same boat, and that everyone would realize, yes, we have acceptable thoughts, we have unacceptable thoughts, and that pretty soon our need for each other and our recognition of our sameness would probably mean that we would be closer together. We would accept these things, we would say, okay, here's what we think, and that we would probably end up more understanding, more loving, better friends than ever before. However, this is still all pure Oz fantasy, because in spite of all the things that science can now do, we're still a long way from mind reading or mind reading machines, and there really isn't any danger that our thoughts will be flashed as brightly on our foreheads, although I could add that if you are adept in looking at people and understanding people, you often can get a glimpse of what they're thinking by watching, you know, faces, movements, things like that. But I think I agree with Marigold, who's a little girl in a book called Magic for Marigold, a very old children's book written by the author of Anne of Green Gables, who leads a rich and imaginative secret life and keeps repeating, as her thoughts are revealed by the writer, "I certainly am glad that nobody can read my thoughts." And not that Marigold's thoughts or my thoughts are so horrible all the time or so miserable all the time that they have to be hidden. Sometimes thoughts are so extra nice, so extra warm, so really so private. It is good to have a private place where you can keep your private thoughts. I like having this secret place where no one knows, where I can keep special things like Joanne's midnight horse. Some people and a lot of literature call this your heart, though we all know that that is symbolic, that it represents the center of your being rather than being any fixed place where these sorts of feelings reside. The poet Sarah Teasdale calls the spot the heart in the poem I'm about to read, and she refers to the heart's treasury, and I get the picture of the heart being divided into special parts, like the chambers of the heart actually are, and that one of the chambers is maybe the storehouse. The word purloin, by the way, means steal. "Into my heart's treasury I slipped a coin that time cannot take, nor a thief purloin. Oh, better than the minting of a gold-crowned king is the safe-kept memory of a lovely thing." But to me, the secret place that no one knows is more than a treasury, a storehouse, where you can retreat and count your gold, your golden memories, though that's important, too, to have such a spot in your heart. There's another old-fashioned children's book, better known, The Secret Garden. And if you've read it, you know that Mary finds the key to a garden that has been locked up for 10 years behind the high walls that sometimes characterize an English garden. And she gets into the garden, and she invites in first her friend Dickon and later Colin, a little sick boy. And they play in the secret garden, and they tend the briars and the flowers, and they grow and prosper in the secret garden. And that's the name that we've come to use in our family for this secret place, for the spot that nobody knows, the secret garden. It seems like a fuller name to me than a treasury, for things are not only stored there and kept safe, but things can be seeded, can grow, can flower, can come to fruit. This isn't to say that what is in your heart's treasury, in your heart's secret garden, that everything there is all beautiful and lovely. There are plenty of weeds in your garden. There are plenty of stagnant pools, horrid things, scary animals, bugaboos and hobgoblins, and all sorts of things that are not pleasant as well as the things that are pleasant. But they're all there, you see, in the secret place. The important thing about your secret garden is, of course, that nobody knows unless you tell them. And you have to be careful. We very early learn when we're small children by experience that if we reveal what is in our secret garden, that some people are going to laugh and make fun, and some people simply aren't going to understand and are going to be puzzled, and some people are going to come in, people that you've trusted, and they're going to pull up the flowers, and they're going to trample around, and they're going to yell and shout when you want quiet, and they're going to throw tin cans into your pools, and are going to behave very badly in your secret garden. And in that case, you get them out as quickly as you can, and you slam the door, and you don't invite them in again. I was talking to a group of people of many different ages the other day about this idea, the secret garden, and asked them if they would be willing to share maybe a little bit out of their secret garden. the private things, the silly things that they're afraid to reveal, the precious things, the horrible things even. And the first person that spoke up said, I used to talk to my mirror. I'd go up to my room and I'd carry on long conversations with the person in the mirror, and I would tell secrets and I would bawl myself out and things of that sort. And this immediately brought up the topic of secret friends, that many of the people had had a secret playmate, or sometimes two or three, when they were younger, and that they would conjure up this secret friend and have all sorts of games and play with them. One grandmother in the group said, oh, my grandchild, who's 3 years old, has a friend named Stacy, and her parents don't pay any attention to Stacy, but whenever she comes to my house, we always set a place for Stacy. I was reminded of the poem by A.A. Milne in Now We Are Six called Binker. Binker, what I call him, is a secret of my own, and Binker is the reason why I never feel alone. Playing in the nursery, sitting on the stair, whatever I am busy at, Binker will be there. Oh, Daddy is clever. He's a clever sort of man. And Mommy is the best since the world began. And Nanny is Nanny, and I call her Nan, but they can't see Binker. Binker's always talking because I'm teaching him to speak. He sometimes likes to do it in a funny sort of squeak, and he sometimes likes to do it in a hoodling sort of roar, and I have to do it for him because his throat is rather sore. Oh, Daddy is clever, he's a clever sort of man, and Mommy is the best since the world began, and Nanny is Nanny, and I call her Nan, but they can't see Binker. Binker's brave as lions when we're running in the park. Binker's brave as tigers when we're lying in the dark. Binker's brave as elephants. He never, never cries, except like other people when the soap gets in his eyes. Oh, Daddy is Daddy. He's a Daddy sort of man, and Mommy is as Mommy as anybody can, and Nanny is Nanny, and I call her Nan. But they're not like Binker. Binker isn't greedy, but he does like things to eat, so I have to say to people when they're giving me a sweet, oh, Binker wants a chocolate, so could you give me two? And then I have to eat it for him, because his teeth are rather new. Well, I'm very fond of Daddy, but he hasn't time to play. And I'm very fond of Mommy, but she sometimes goes away. And I'm often cross with Nanny when she wants to brush my hair. But Binker's always Binker, and is certain to be there. One of the girls in our group told me that she had been a princess and had had an imaginary prince that she called Prince Philip, but she really called him for short Milky, and the connection there was the Philip's Milk of Magnesia bottle. And then their horse, on which they rode around doing brave deeds, was a blue bike, and so he was called Blue. And that reminded me also of the Philips Milk of Magnesia bottle, which is blue glass. You don't often find blue glass, and if you need it for a project, I've known that you go and buy some Philips Milk of Magnesia, whether you need it or not. Their kingdom was the backyard, and their playhouse was their castle. And Julie told me that they were often attacked by imaginary enemies, and they would rush into the yard and shout out, tick-tock, double lock, and then nobody could come in. And this was her play fantasy in her private place. Not only is there a feeling for imaginary things, I've discovered, in people's secret gardens, but also a feeling for inanimate things, things that aren't alive, but which we make alive. Nobody knows, said Connie, one of the girls in our group, a young wife, 21 years old, and she confessed it a little bit shamefacedly that she rotated the plates. They had an 8-plate wedding set, and just she and her husband to use them, and so she would rotate the plates, not just use the same two, which would always be on top, so that the other plates wouldn't be slighted, as if the plates had feelings. And that made Nancy say that when she was at school, she rotated her pencils for the very same reason, so that no one pencil would feel that it was having poorer treatment than the other pencils. And then everybody brought up stuffed animals that were really alive and have feelings. R. Elspeth, who is 7, sleeps with 5, And when I kiss her goodnight, I also have to kiss Monster Monkey, Squeaky Black Spot, Bear, Little Bear, and Clyde. And it's not very nice to kiss Clyde, since he's a small metal horse and is usually cold, and if you lick your lips afterwards, they taste bad. But if I show a preference for Squeaky Black Spot, who really is my favorite, a big, floppy, white dog with large black spots on him, Elspeth will cry out in anguish, "Don't say it in front of the others," because she doesn't want their feelings to be hurt. The group generally agreed that the secret garden and a lot of their imaginings are ways of making things perfect in the world that isn't always perfect, that in your secret garden you can keep things the way you want. You can arrange things and have them stay that way. You can go there to ease the bruises of the outside world. It's a place to recover as well as a place to have the fun of imagining and wandering. Today I know it's asking an awful lot because the secret garden is private. But I thought that maybe today in your writing you might be willing to share something out of the secret garden, maybe something on the fringe. Not necessarily something that is so deep in that it is not yet ready to be revealed, but something around the edges that you might not mind if somebody smiles at. I know that it needs to be someone that you trust to be let into the deepest part, and yet we're all human beings and we all have a need to share out of our secret place. And that right now, if you don't feel the need, someday you will want to share the things that are the deepest things in your secret garden. But maybe today you might be willing to tell us about your horse named Midnight that no one knows about, or your bike horse named Blue, or your imaginary friend, or your moon ritual, or sundance, or frog worship. And I think we'll all try to be careful not to tramp on anybody's flowers or to be shocked at anybody's weeds if we are privileged to share with you what no one knows.
WSSR Radio has presented Reading and Writing and Radio. Send your writings to Jacqueline Jackson, Sangamon State University, Springfield, Illinois, 62708.